Off the Ball on News Talk 106 to 108.
I'm prepared to anything I can.
Well,
to
do
play
it then.
Play again.
Do it then. What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should it be an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Oh. Sam McDonald, good evening to you.
Evening, Jarrett.
How are you doing?
Good.
Yeah, it's here now, pretty much.
The match is upon us, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a build-up, not just a week long, but in some ways 3 or 4 months long, in the sense that it's always been hanging around in the background, you know, and any player goes down injured, or we're following
all
Gareth Bale from afar. And yeah, as has been spoken about several times this week, the irony of it all is that
it's
Ireland are in the depleted heading into this fixture. But
yeah,
it's you know, to build up to these games, I mean, we spoke about it a bit outside. I mean, it drags to an extent, but I mean, part of that is a good sign, because things are quite stable at the moment from an Irish point of view. You know, top of the group, 10 from 12. It's not, you know, a circus campaign like, you know, say Stan's time or even elements of the Trapp era, where there's almost fatigue setting in and there's a lot of things going on that would make you worried. Things are going okay, and we'll see how the game goes tomorrow to see if that positive momentum that's been generated from the Euros, pretty much from Germany, from the Germany night, sort of, you know, a year ago or sort of 18 months ago, that's really propelled this group to a position where I think it's not unreasonable to have a bit of confidence in them, you know, and
with the players missing.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I you know, you were speaking a bit earlier on about how it's plausible to see, you know, Wales winning this game 2-0 or something. I'm not sure on recent form would I be that pessimistic. I take the point, the context of it being, you know, they have one outstanding individual and a couple of players that we would take in a heartbeat.
And a system as well that suits the players they have.
Yeah, but I suppose so.
Which
I think
we don't
so
come up against very often.
True, and that is a fair point. And I know they've struggled a bit, and the argument from the Welsh perspective would be, well, they haven't had all their best players available until now, and they do have them available. But I mean, it's just the nature of international football. You know, we tend to, when opponents come into sight, we focus on their best side. Before Bosnia, we were obsessing about sort of quality of sort of Pjanic and, you know, Dzeko and all the sort of quality players that they have.
Yeah.
As it happened, Ireland bashed them in that second leg and deserved to go through. And I think there's weaknesses in Wales you can look at as well. They've led in their last three games at half time and not won any of them. And, you know, speaking to people today, you know, a couple of Welsh lads that were over, they would say that, you know, they would feel that since the Euros, naturally Wales aren't a team you underestimate anymore. You know,
yeah,
the card is marked and they're being given less space. And that's fair enough. But I'm trying to sort of tally that with actually they've got into winning positions in games and they've not been able to hold on to them.
Yeah.
So, okay, they were missing players at various times, but they're not the most formidable opponent in the world. I mean, let's be honest, you know, the fact that Wales were in this group made this group look more attractive from an Irish perspective, because they were the top seed. It's not the Germany playing for second place top seed.
Yeah.
It's a team that you feel that if Ireland performed to their maximum, they're very capable of getting a result. Granted, you know, the loss of players has complicated the task, and I think, you know, deep down, if you said to Martin O'Neill, as much as they're never ever going to say it, but a draw tomorrow night, it's very easy to put a good spin on it in terms of where the group is at.
Keep
overall
your momentum going.
Keep the momentum going.
Home games to come.
But I listened to John Giles earlier, and I take the point that maybe if Wales are on the ropes a bit, and if as much as Coleman is saying all the right things, I think there's a sense from, again, chatting to Welsh lads, they know they have to get a really good result here to get back into it.
Yeah.
There is that sort of opportunity to take them out of it. You know, to really take them out of it. And
never been a strong point of ours. But actually, that game against Bosnia you talked about, where we just went and destroyed them, maybe in some ways that doesn't get the credit it deserves in the development of this team. Or like, because it was a playoff and it was a second leg, we kind of, it was like, oh, we're going to the Euros and almost forget about it. But actually, it's the most mature, controlled performance that we've had against really good opposition.
Yeah, for me, probably the best performance of the O'Neill era, possibly better than Lille, you know, possibly better than Lille. I wouldn't be one of those who just completely sort of denigrates the Lille performance, because Italy didn't really have much to play for. It still was a competitive game against, you know, some good players that were trying to make their own point. But you chip away at it, whereas Bosnia, it was high stakes for both teams.
Yeah.
And it was a really
mature
performance and really aggressive and high tempo and clinical. I think that would be the word, really, clinical. And you say that's maybe something that Irish teams haven't always been renowned for being... there's always the near misses, there's always the even the almost the wins like Lille, you're sort of hanging on or getting a late goal at the end, whereas in from Bosnia, you know, two goals up with 20 minutes to go and
really played it out,
and that to me is a template for what's attainable for the home games in the rest of this year, more so than Anthony. I know there's a lot of chat today about Lille and so on, but sort of different circumstances, major tournament and so on. We've had this thing for a long period of time about not having home advantage at the AV, but not really making it a fortress in any way.
Yeah.
That sort of changed towards the end of the last campaign. Flat again against Georgia in October, not great.
Yeah.
And in a position where the other team dictated a lot of the game. And you'd hope that doesn't happen tomorrow, but you can see why it might. With maybe some of our more assertive players on the ball missing from the match.
Yeah, okay, a couple of quick texts here. Chris Coleman's targeting at least a point. Well, he's hardly targeting a loss. What a stupid answer, says the moaner by text. The point is that he's not calling it a must-win game. He's not ratcheting up the pressure. His players were playing that down as well. They're not buying that.
No, well, they're never going to say it anyway. I mean, if you say that, you make a rod for your own back heading into a game that is quite difficult. You can call Moldova at home a must-win game and... fair chance you might get away with it.
Yeah. Everybody seems very pessimistic about the spectacle we're likely to see tomorrow. Would Dan pay for a ticket if he wasn't working at the game, asks Helen.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I probably would for this one. I think it's a you know, in international football there are nights that don't inspire, but this is a game that really means something to both sets of players, to both sets of fans. I saw people commenting.
Derby game against a team who just played in the semi-finals.
There's a lot of Welsh around town tonight, and I think with international football, it annoys people to a point because maybe there are dead rubber fixtures or just games that, you know, they're hard to inspire you. I think the anthem's tomorrow. Sort of a highly charged atmosphere.
What are you talking about? It's Ireland playing a big football match at home. Of course you're going to pay for a ticket.
I mean, it's sold out. So I guess...
A lot of people felt that way.
That's a rare thing. Sold out a good bit in advance as well. So
yeah.
I think this game sells itself in many ways.
We're going to bring you some Seamus Coleman and Martin O'Neill in a second. But Paddy Nathlone says, is the future looking a bit better? The under-19s beat Italy 2-0 today. The under-17s qualified for the Euro finals last week. Someone somewhere must be doing something right.
It's a good result for the 19s, yeah. It's quite unusual. They're in an elite phase group trying to qualify for the Euros this summer. The under-17s has gone to 16 teams get into the finals. They still won their group, it must be said, but it's maybe a small bit easier to qualify for a 17s, whereas the 19s is a real high bar. And actually, this under-19 generation now would have competed in the under-17 championships 2 years ago. So it's just that generation, there's a few of the same players. And they beat Italy. Oddly enough, they're in a group with Italy, Belgium and Sweden, a complete replica of our Euro 2016 qualifying group. And the Belgians are still meant to be pretty good, but a very good result today. It beat Italy 2-0. Conor Levingston scored. I think he's from Wexford. And Ronan Hale, one of the Belfast guys.
Oh, yeah.
Who the brothers, one with Birmingham, one with Villa. He's with Birmingham. He's the younger guy, but two players at the centre of the recent sort of eligibility issue. Northern Ireland quite sore about it. But it's a talented... It's a good generation of players. There are also some of the better players are injured, like Conor Ronan and Stephen Kinsella and a few of those. Conor Masterton from Liverpool playing, a few other names. Trevor Clark at Shamrock Rovers involved, and they were involved in that team 2 years ago. So it is encouraging. They've still got, I mean, beating Italy, you would think that's almost the key step, but they have to play this Belgian side too. But yeah, some of those Italians have Serie A experience, and that is a good generation that year. So, and Tom Moen, the manager, was their manager at 17s and has since graduated to 19s.
Okay.
So there is definitely some hope there. There's some decent players at that level, and they're coming into that crunch age period now though, like that 19 to 22, 23 window. Because we do have a situation where I still think, you know, we look at our Young Player of the Year award at the FEI gig, 25-year-olds in the picture. They've had to introduce it, raise it to 25 because we're not capping guys below. So you're hoping that this age group maybe can bridge. I think we're having later developers as well. We've had this debate before, but yeah, hopefully maybe there might be a few early bloomers in that group.
That'd be good, just to change things around a little bit. All right, Seamus Coleman and Martin O'Neill, here they are talking about the threat of Gareth Bale.
Yeah, obviously, I think everyone knows the story by now. He was a left-back, moved to left-wing, and when he was doing really well against the likes of Inter Milan and that, I was a right midfielder, and whenever we played them, it was a doubling up job with Phil Neville and had to be done, but he's really kicked on, and he's got on to great things, and wish him well, of course, but, you know, we're a team who've played against big players in the past. I remember when we played Sweden in the summer, all the talk was about Zlatan, and it's quite similar this time, but we're fully focused on our job and looking forward to the game. Look, just as I said, we were getting asked the same questions in the summer about certain players, and it's just you've got another 10 players in the pitch you've got to worry about. We know he's a world-class player, and we're going to have to be careful and get tight to him in certain areas, but we can't just fully focus on Gareth Bale. We've got a lot of good players, and as I said, we need to make sure they worry about us as well.
And Martin, do you spend a lot of time talking to the players about him, or is it a case of...
No, I just echo exactly what Seamus has said, that we've had to deal with big players in the last couple of years in the opposition side, dealt with it reasonably well. Of course, there are going to be moments and matches when great players extricate themselves from difficult positions and cause you problems. That's why they are great players. So that's that type of thing that we'll try and cut to a minimum if we can. But we naturally, being a brilliant player, he will cause us problems.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, we've talked about Gareth Bale.
I can't handle another Gareth Bale-based query. How are we going to stop him? I think we've established at this point
he's good.
No one is going to answer that question. No one, Marinelli is not going to suddenly drop everything and go, actually, here's what we're going to do. Here's what we are going to do. We're going to send certain players out in a particular position, in a particular formation, and stop them.
Kick him.
We had to have the Roy Keane tackle him, hit him, slash fairly the other day.
Yeah, yeah.
And we shall see. To be fair, I think Chris Coleman's made the point that it's not the first time that Gareth Bale has encountered that strategy. He's generally made
it
to level.
We're not very good at that kind of stuff, though. Like, it's not really in our nature. We're not a cheating little country of... where we go out and nastily, like, five people kick Bale in a row, but they all do, you know, it's my turn.
Yeah, you see, can't afford to do that anyway, because it leads to problems. I mean, the referee is sort of relatively experienced referees. The referee when he played France last summer sent Shane Duffy off. Wasn't really a hard call at that point, it must be said. But the point is...
Should we have had a penalty in the first half of that game?
Well, we did get one.
Oh, yeah.
We did get a penalty. There was shouts at various points for a Darren Murphy incident in the box and a couple of others. But we've had him for Ireland and Scotland before. He refed the World Cup final in 2014. He is quite a decent ref, sort of famous last words now. And he's deemed to have screwed us tomorrow night. But the point we have is that strength and depth, or maybe lack thereof, has maybe been exposed by... And what's killing Martin O'Neill this week is that, like, Robbie Brady got a very stupid ban. We've got Seamus Coleman on a yellow, we've got Ward, we've got Walters, and there's a fourth player, Glenn Whelan, on a yellow.
Yeah.
Okay, you will try and neutralise the threat of Bale and so on, but the next game is also Austria at home. So if you set the tone early, you know, you're laying... out the risk of booking. I mean, you have to live in the moment and live in the game, and you can't just be going around with this stuff in your mind. But I think that approach of sort of trying to kick someone off the place, it won't get you very far.
Much as we might moan about so-called dirty football on the odd quiet weekend of sport, this time of year is hard to beat. Exciting finish to the Six Nations, Cheltenham, the smell of the GAA Championship brewing, and early spring football internationals. The merest suggestion of daylight as you're making your way to the Aviva at 6 in the evening. A promise of summer to come. Love it. Says Mickey the Optimist. Lads, go on.
Very cheerful. Yeah,
yeah, it's a good shout. Phil and Bluebell says, lads, I enjoyed the Welsh run in the Euros, but they haven't come within an ass's roar of that since, and let's not make a big deal of them coming here. We should and will beat them. Other than Brady, we can replace the rest with pretty much the same standard player. I think our central defensive partnership was starting to grow into something good.
Yeah,
I'd like to see that partnership again. Unfortunately,
yeah, that's
we ain't gonna see that.
That's a loss. Although, again, you do look around the Irish team that's likely to play tomorrow, or certainly we have a rough idea of the team that might play tomorrow. But there is quite a lot of experience. Like, you're talking about the occasion and being a sort of a full-blooded derby and really intense, that, you know, O'Shea, Keogh, sort of Ward, Coleman, like, there's nothing they haven't really encountered before.
Yeah.
You know, there's no, you know, the element of a gamble maybe is whether he's going to throw in someone sort of half fit like McCarthy, or hopefully a bit more than half fit. But in terms of actual, the sort of, you know, the intensity of the occasion and so on, most of the players have been around the block before. And I guess you could say it about the Welsh team as well. It's not really a game you get the sense there's going to be much experimentation. But it is a blow to lose that Clark-Duffy partnership. But I suppose O'Shea and Keogh could be construed as sort of a safe pair of hands. I think in Serbia, it wasn't the best night for the overall team performance, but O'Shea and Keogh have paired up before to reasonable effect.
Okay. Frosty says, lads, the tension as to whether John Hartson will appear in tonight's show or not is killing me. Find out after the break.
Off the Ball.
Home of live Premier League every Sunday from midday.
On News Talk 106 to 108.
All right, you're very welcome back. I'm delighted to say we've got John Hartson and Keith Andrews with us. Lads, you're very welcome.
Evening, Jeff. Hey,
Paul.
Thank you. Hi, Keith.
Hey, Johnny.
You're awake, John.
Just about, yeah. I started to listen to Kenny on the show last night and it made me fall asleep. Kenny Cunningham just tipped me off the edge, it did. So I thought, I'll just nod off here. I'll catch you tomorrow.
When are you getting to Dublin? Are you coming over for the game?
Coming over tomorrow, yeah, on the 8:20 from Edinburgh. That's where I live now. It's my new home. And I'll get into Dublin and I'll get some prep done in the afternoon and take it easy tomorrow, and then obviously probably get to the Aviva for around about 4:30, 4:45, and just suck it all in, really, mate. Just take in all the atmosphere and hopefully it'll be a great night for us.
Who are you doing the game for?
I'm doing the game for BBC Five Live alongside Ian Brown, one of the expertise commentators that we have working for Five Live, alongside Kevin Kilbane, the two of us will be doing it. So basically, you know, we will have a mic each, but it's a case of sharing, you know, coming in and out, and obviously we'll have to keep us apart. I think Brownie will have to sit in the middle of us.
You've been lording it over us here on this show for about 2 years, ever since Wales got good at international football, and now it's time for the team to put their money where your mouth has been.
Well, hopefully, you know, we did win 4 games out of 6 at the Euros. You won 1 game in 4. So, you know, you did very well. You give the crowd a great night against Italy. You know, it meant that you stayed up on until the last 16. Sorry. So, you know, I just feel that it's a group, Jay, that, you know, a lot of the teams, I think, will take points off each other. You look at the top 3 teams, Republic of Ireland, Serbia, Wales, you know, they're all unbeaten so far. And you have to respect, without sounding too patronising towards you boys, you know, you have to respect where the Republic of Ireland are right now. We know they're unbeaten. They've won 3 games out of 4. You've got a game at home against Wales where you can put yourself 7 points clear. But I really feel tomorrow's a big day throughout the whole group, because I think Serbia will go and win in Georgia. That will put them top of the group. They will go to 11. And obviously, I think Austria will win at home as well to Moldova. So all of a sudden, you know, it's pretty much tomorrow evening. You've got a real big chance, the Republic of Ireland, to give yourself that extra bit of a breathing space ahead of the others. And I think it's absolutely imperative that that Wales pick something up. But I genuinely don't think we can afford to get beat.
Yeah. Keith, that's really the essence of this. It comes down to, if we can win this game, then the group looks really comfortable for us. But if Wales win this game, then suddenly absolutely anything, all the way from Austria recovering from where they are to them maybe not winning the group, but they'll have a great chance of qualifying. So this, like, it's a real pivotal moment for Ireland. And if we have the right attitude, we can blow this thing wide open.
Yeah, I think John's hit the nail on the head with, in terms of the Euro games. I fully anticipate both of the Euro teams, Austria and Serbia, collect 3 points tomorrow. So it's a huge, huge game. And I don't think it's down to attitude, Jay. You know, that's not something that I think can be thrown at our players 90% plus of the time. I think the injuries that's been well documented is going to have a huge effect. And I think we're facing a team that's got similar, probably as good a team spirit as we have.
And I think arguably they've got better players. I think they're playing at a higher level. And I do think the pressure is on them. I think a draw would suit us in the overall standings. In the main, we haven't hit anywhere near top gear in this group yet, but yet we still stand high and mighty on top of it. So we'll be very happy with what we've done so far, but there's a hell of a long way to go.
Yeah, Keith, I mean, how would you approach the game tomorrow, particularly in the position you used to play? I mean, you've been involved in Irish teams that have occasionally been overrun in the centre of the park. And obviously Wales with the wing-backs, but they're very strong through the middle with sort of Allen and, you know Ramsey and Bale drifting into those areas. If you're Martin O'Neill, do you think, OK, I've got Glenn Whelan, but I need a Myler or a James McCarthy or someone in there for extra protection, even if it's at the expense of including a McGeady or someone further forward?
Yeah, very much. I've been kind of caught in between a little bit this week because you don't want teams coming to the Aviva and getting a touch on it early, strolling around. But then at the back of my mind, I'm thinking, if we go and really press and are aggressive with this team and we leave huge spaces, which Wales are magnificent at in terms of hitting teams on the counter-pack with you-know-who, I think that could be a mistake. But the crowd in a game like this are going to want the players to get at it. I still think we can do it in a right way, but I don't think we can go gung-ho. And I do think we need that extra man in midfield. So definitely Whelan, if McCarthy's fit 100%, and I think Hendrick as well. But it's just whether he goes with McGeady on one side, who's been on fine form for Preston, James McLean, you'd imagine, would certainly be on one side.
So, sorry, is that a four-man midfield?
I'd go five, Jay. I would genuinely go five. I'd go really strong in the heart of midfield. I'd probably go McLean one side, and whether he feels McGeady, he can trust him. We know he likes him. Whether he goes him the other side, and probably a John Walters with a Shane Long to come on. That's the way I would go, because I think you've got to be very, very wary and respectful of this team that we're facing tomorrow.
When you do that, do you automatically give them a sense of, ooh, they're taking a step back from us tonight?
Yeah, quite possibly. Quite possibly, but I do think if we go and press, we could cause them a lot of problems in terms of going forward. But I do think we would be very, very vulnerable if we commit too many men forward at the wrong times tomorrow. They're at their best when they're a counter-attacking. Gareth Bale will pick up those pockets in between our two centre-halves if we push two full-backs forward. And especially, I just keep thinking back to the Belgium game, how badly we got caught on the counter-attack by pacey players. I keep kind of thinking back to that and it worries me. So is it a little bit pessimistic? Is it a little bit kind of, are we respecting them too much? Possibly, but I think they deserve it in the same way, and certainly Gareth Bale does.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, John, can I just ask you, John, I mean, Wales have led in their last three games and not won any of them, just the way it's panned out. They've conceded a couple of late goals. Has there been any sort of recurring team or like tactical mistake in those games in terms of how the overall approach, or how would you assess how those points were dropped?
Well, I think when we were going through the qualifiers for the European Championships, I think the one difference was, you know, we took 4 points off. We drew with Belgium away from home and we beat them at home. And what the difference for me has been seeing games through. Now, Keith will know, being able to manage a game where you can see a game out of in leading early is an art in itself. It's not an easy thing to do from a mental point of view, from a physical point of view. When you take an early lead in a match, you know, do you sit deep? Do you invite them to come and attack you? Do you go for a second? And mentally fatigued, it could take a lot out of a team. So when people say, oh, you should have held on, you should have put one more at the back, you should have filled the midfield, packed it five across the middle, two banks, four and a five, make it difficult. That is hard. And what we managed to do in the Euros, in the qualifiers, where we did that exceptionally well, whereas in this campaign, in the World Cup campaign, we led twice in Austria and we were pegged back twice. We led at home to Serbia until the 90th minute when Mitrovic got the equaliser. We also led 1-0 at home to Georgia and we were pegged back. So in three out of the four games, we beat Moldova. But in the other three games, we led in them games. And Austria, you had a wonderful result in Austria, a magnificent result. Credit to you boys. for pulling that result off is magnificent, considering Austria have not been beaten for over 4 years, you know, at their place, you know, at their home ground. So that's been the difference, you know. It's just mentally, I think, that concentration levels, stopping crosses coming into the box at source, just managing a game where we were brilliant at it throughout the whole campaign of the Euros, as I've mentioned. But this time around, we've just taken the lead and we've not managed to see the games through. It's the same group of players. It's the same tactics. Nothing has changed. Same personnel. It's just that I wouldn't even say it's unlucky, because I don't want to be making excuses up for the boys, and I don't think they want to make excuses up. They've got to get back to seeing games out, to concentrating for 90 minutes and make sure you nail them 3 points down, because 3 points in these in this type of format are absolutely huge if you can pick up 3 points.
Coleman said that this is the first real chance since the semi-final of the Euros, maybe it would have been the quarter-final of the Euros, that they've had the three best players across the midfield together, assuming Bale obviously is a forward really, but that he'll have Ramsey and Joe Allen and Gareth Bale available. And that's kind of, you know, when you've got a small squad like you do, like we do, it's really important to get those players out in the field together as often as possible.
Yeah, well, of course, and like everything else, you know, when you go through a campaign, it's, you know, sometimes it's a case of, you know, players picking up two bookings in succession and they miss the next game. Naturally, players are going to get injured. Say, for instance, if we'd had a qualifier in February, then Gareth Bale wouldn't have been fit. If we'd had a qualifier in the whole of January, Aaron Ramsey wouldn't have been fit because they missed games for their respective clubs. As it happens, this game comes at the end of March and the players have been able to get themselves fit for this game. So we've, you know, we know that, you know, when we play and when we play well, and you allow Gareth Bale the space to run into, and Sam Vokes is in good form at Burnley and he's getting goals, and you know what type of, you know, player Joe Allen is, and whether Joe Ledley comes in, who's a really steady player for Wales. He seems to play ever so well for his country, Joe Ledley. And we defend fairly strong as well with the three at the back and the wing-backs. That is a system that the manager, Chris Coleman, has worked on over several years now in charge. It's been three at the back with James Chester, Ashley Williams and Ben Davis, who plays left-back for his club, but he slots in at left-side centre-half. So, it, you know, systems and players, it's whoever can deal with the pressure tomorrow night, whoever can, you know, in that sort of, you know, red hot atmosphere, it's whoever can control the nerves, whichever player can, you know, most of the guys play in the Premier League most weeks, Jer, anyway, so they're used to big atmospheres. But I think when you represent your country, and for Ireland, for Republic of Ireland, when you put that green shirt on, and it's the same with the Welsh boys, when you stick that Welsh red shirt on, you know, you're playing for your nation, you're playing for your heritage, your family, your parents, your children. You know, all that sort of passionate stuff, it'll all come out tomorrow night, I'm sure, because they're two very, very proud nations and neither want to lose this game tomorrow.
Keith, what do you actually think is going to happen?
I don't want to sound pessimistic, but if you offer me a draw, I'd take it and move on. Sharpish, especially if you go back 2 weeks ago, before we had this just disastrous run of injuries, I would have fancied us. And I still think we can win tomorrow, but I think much of that depends on you-know-who not performing in a Welsh shirt. But I think it's going to be a really, really tough and really, really tight game. And I think it's very, very hard to call it. But like I said, if you offered me a draw, I would take it. And I think if you offered Martin a draw privately, he would jump on it and move on to the next game in June.
Yeah, we've got enough home games left and we've got still two games against the bottom two teams in the group that there's enough points on offer for us to be able to get out of this tricky situation and still top the table. Two quick texts here. I met John Hartson in Glasgow Airport a few years ago. An hour earlier, he'd scored the winner against Rangers at Ibrox. He was flying down to Wales to pick up his Welsh Player of the Year. It was some session. One of the nicest men in football, says Paul and Kerry.
text him back, Jed, and ask him which year was that, because I think I got four winners and I got 11 goals against Rangers in total. So that's why I don't watch it. I got so fed up with scoring the winning goal in that fixture, I don't watch him anymore.
Well, I want to play you this then. On Tuesday, we had your former Welsh teammate, Robbie Savage, on the show. We asked him if he had any stories about you that were fit for...
I bet he mixed them all up.
Well, let's see.
True.
Let's have a listen to this one. He claimed that just like you terrorised a few centre-backs in your time, you were equally dangerous around fancy cars.
I'll give you one. Listen, I don't want the listeners to think, you know, I'm big time or anything, but you know, in the era of being a Premier League footballer, I was very, very fortunate, and to this day still, you know, can't believe how lucky I was. And you know, I love cars, you know, and I had a very nice car. And John, because we used to stay in the Vale of Glamorgan Hotel, obviously when he played for Celtic, he used to travel down, you know, get the plane down, and he didn't have a car. So one day he borrowed my car. He said, "Can I borrow your car to go and see my mother and father in Swansea?" He said, "Yeah, John." I said, "Please be careful with it." Anyway, he took it home. He brought it back about 12:30, 1 in the morning. And next morning I get up for breakfast and a huge scratch down the side of it. So I was panicking. I went to wake him up. I said, "John, my car." He said, "Oh, Savage, I forgot to tell you. I caught the gate on the way into my mum and dad's house. I didn't want to leave it on the road." So he said, "I caught the gate." And he had a massive scratch down the side of my car, which I forgive him because, you know, he paid for it in the end, but devastated. And it was a nice car.
Don't doubt that.
With F. And it didn't have four letters.
He rang Kilbane afterwards to explain it wasn't a Fiat.
Just in no, case it wasn't a Fiat. Certainly wasn't a Fiat. No, the staff just say there he wasn't big time.
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay.
Did you crash his Ferrari?
I don't know. I think I might have stopped in the services in Cardiff. I think a Cardiff City fan went and scratched it. I'm not quite sure, to be honest. But if I did, I would have paid him back. But do you know what? It's that long ago. I can't really remember.
What kind of a teammate was he?
Oh, he was brilliant. You know, he covered every blade of grass, Sav. A little bit insecure. You know, you'd have to be reassured all the time. I remember one particular game, he'd followed me to the toilet at half time, and I was having a little Jimmy Riddle on my own in the corner. And that's a piddle, if anybody doesn't know what Jimmy Riddle is. And he's gone to me, he said, "John," he says, "how am I doing? Am I doing okay?" So I just basically said to him, "Look, Sav, yeah, you're doing all right, mate, but just try passing it to a red shirt in the second half if you possibly can." But that was trying to reassure him. But no, he's a good lad, Robbie. I think he's sometimes a bit misunderstood, and you know, people see him sort of on the television, and he's not shy with his opinions. You know, he's actually, I think he's turned into a very good pundit, and you know, he wore his heart on his sleeve. He loved playing for Wales. It's a shame that it came to an abrupt end under John Toshack. I think they fell out, and it became a bit personal, and then he never played after that, which was a shame, because when he did play and when he was in the camp, he gave absolutely everything. And you speak to Martin O'Neill about Robbie Savage, who Sav did excellent for Martin O'Neill at Leicester. He was very infectious, covered lots of ground, and you know, got in people's faces, and he was a better footballer than some people give him credit for.
John, great stuff. Enjoy the game tomorrow. Thanks a million.
Cheers, guys. All the best, Keith.
See you, pal. See you at points, Mark.
See you, boys. All the best, lads.
We'll let you two arrange your date afterwards. Thanks a million, Keith, as well. Best of luck. We'll talk to you at some point during the game tomorrow. Right. Earlier on, we asked you to name Wales' top goal scorer of all time. The answer is Ian Rush. And congratulations to Ronan Cook. You and a mate have got a pair of tickets for the game. So well done. He's got 28 goals for Wales. John Hartson at 14. Rush getting 28 goals. That puts Robbie Keane 600 into...
I suppose this is where people say something about there wasn't as many games and minnow nations in those days. Not sure. There's a kernel of a point in that.
We are going to take a quick break. We're back with Graham Hunter.
Off the Ball.
Home of live Premier League every Sunday from midday.
On News Talk 106 to 108.
So some of the quick stories we should briefly talk about. The England fans covering themselves in glory last night again with their usual anti-German, anti-IRA chants.
Yeah, they've had a resurgence in the last 18 months. It's like a new breed. I was reading a Bernie Roney piece today in The Guardian about it, just sort of suggesting that actually on the ground, it wasn't really very intimidating. They're more sort of like the in-betweeners was his description, you know?
Yeah.
They're sort of, they're trying to relive all the glories, but really wouldn't be capable of doing it if you wanted to actually take it to the extreme. But I think it's just, I mean, the FA have felt it serious enough to come out, I think, Greg Clark, to condemn inappropriate, disrespectful and disappointing behaviour. It's just sick on the whole 10 German bombers stuff. I mean, you know, you encounter that at major tournaments and so on. It's
the trouble is that
it's all
it gives
a bit of a skit. It's a great crack for them.
Yeah.
You know? It's just mortifying for everyone else, really.
Yeah.
On the day that was in it as well.
The thing is, it does feel like it somehow helps the proper scumbags to feel emboldened. You know, the in-betweeners might be there, but they kind of egg on the guys who might be actually capable of it. And it doesn't take that much for that to spill in from, to for that mood to change from, here we are, a bunch of, like, weirdos,
yeah,
but, to a bunch of psychos.
But I think the point's been made that a lot of the old troublemakers are just old now. You know, they're not really up to much. You know, they're sort of trying to, like, you see a couple of photos and you have the couple of characters there with their flags, who maybe like 15, 20 years ago were in their pomp, but now they're sort of a relic of a bygone era, and the younger lads trying to latch onto them, trying to, you know, impress them maybe in some way, but like, we'll see. And they're singing about going to Russia now, and they might encounter a slightly different world if they take that mindset to Russia with them. It's not to glorify that in any way, but I'm not sure if they're the outfit that they used to be.
Okay, well, let's just briefly go on, because we wanted to respond there to a point that Keith Andrews had made, that he thinks perhaps Shane Long might be on the bench.
I've heard that point now a couple of times this week, and I suppose there is a, you know, there is an argument to be made that if you stack your starting team with, say, McGeady and Long, and then don't have a Myler or McCarthy, you know, what's your go-to option off the bench if you're in trouble? You know, if you're behind in a game, and maybe you have a Welsh team that they, you know, they're going to probably, you would imagine, burst out fairly strongly. That maybe, you know, if it's a real high tempo, intense match, that there will be space to exploit later on when players get tired, and this is where Long comes on and does very well. So do you want to keep something in reserve that earlier on you're going to have, you know, Walters and McLean and a certain amount of physicality? I mean, McLean is going to be extremely fired up. I think
David,
it's been
Myler, like, does David, like, it's the whole point of these games, that if you play really well in one, you get in the team.
Yeah, and he came off and come on and did extremely well in Austria. I mean, he came on for Whelan. I suppose the point would be, are you going to play him and Whelan together? But certainly he's very energetic, Myler, and if you want to cover ground and restrict Bale and Ramsey that space if they drop into that sort of pocket area. It's interesting, the McCarthy one, he's trained now 2 days in a row, but we don't get to see really the full training sessions. And O'Neill did speak today about, well, you have to think about how long someone is going to play for. I think really what you would apply or take from that would be, McCarthy doesn't have 90 minutes in him, so do you try and get 60 out of him, or do you leave him on the bench and then risk wasting a sub if he comes on and all
Can't
of a sudden
that.
he's crocked within 10 minutes? He's come off the bench and done okay for Everton once or twice this year, but you would think if you're going to take a chance on him, you just pick him and then you have that Myler option in reserve. So you wonder, I was convinced McGeady would play. I'm maybe not feeling that way at the moment, with the possibility that, as sort of Keith talked about there, that you might go for that extra body in the middle and think that maybe with McLean and Walters and Long, you sort of have a forward three there, you know.
Yeah.
McLean's got, I mean, it's very emotional week. McLean obviously is wearing the number 5, thought of Ryan McBride, and you know, he's going to be tearing around the place. You know, it's, you can see him channeling that in the right way. You've got Walters, you've got Long, you've got a strong base there. And maybe actually it's not that you're bringing Long on later on, you're bringing on McGeady maybe in the second half, when if you're needing something, that he could be the guy who finds the gaps that maybe have been created by the energy of the game. Yeah, and he could slot into it. But I can see the argument for keeping a McGeady or a Long in reserve rather than picking both of them.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden having the Myler or McCarthy as your number 12. If you need something in the game, then you're looking to Horgan or you're looking to Hurrahan or something.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to bring Myler and McCarthy on to rescue a situation, I would say.
No, unless it somehow allows you to change your formations.
Maybe to free
again.
People up, get McLean going. Yeah, that's true. You can do that, but you'd think you want to have a slightly more dynamic option to come into the game if you feel that the second half substitutions are going to be important, which they have been throughout this campaign. Go back to Serbia, even. You know, the subs were pretty important as it panned out.
Yeah. Jake Gill on Twitter says, Keith Andrews describing Gareth Bale like Voldemort, he who must not be named. Yeah, we've kind of pitched it relatively fine, I think, from the managerial and players' position this week. It's like, look, we understand it's really good, but we're not going to bang on about it.
No.
Unlike us who have been banging on about it all week.
Well, we bang on about it, and it's the line that, and I say this from the paper point of view, you know, there's great sort of traction in Bale. I mean, Vincent Hogan had a piece in the Indo today speaking about how it's become an obsession, and it's, you know, it's almost, it is going too far. But in some ways it can be a nice distraction for players. So yeah, field a couple of easy questions about Bale. It's actually as strange this week that we are actually in like the best position we've been in the qualifying group in some time, yet it doesn't feel like the pressure is on. You know, it's almost like with the injuries and everything, we've managed to somehow channel, regain that almost underdog feeling that,
yeah,
God, it would be a bonus if we got the 3 points from this game.
Yeah.
Whereas normally, well, not normally, just the position that we're in, you would think, you know, home games to come this year, 4 from 6, God, you know, it'd be dreadful to mess this up. But that's not the language. It's almost as though we have managed to position ourselves as the underdogs, and the injuries and everything has helped to create that mentality, that mindset.
Yeah, I really felt that this week, because up to the injuries happening, I was like, ooh, this is a dangerous situation must be in.
We don't like being favourites.
Well, we like whatever about, we all bang on about how that used to be the case and now it's not the case anymore. It's 100% true. We hate being favourites. We hate the expectancy of victory against teams who we're supposed to be able to beat. And like all of a sudden it's like, well, we're not really supposed to win this game now with the bare bones squad we have.
Yeah.
The perfect nil all performance where, you know, we pull something out.
And then you nick it. You know, I think the injuries are like, you know, pretty grim. So it's not part of some coherent plan, but I can see how they can spin it, you know, in regards to just when the game comes around, people are like realizing, okay, there's sometimes an impatience at some of the home games, you know, where things aren't happening, where maybe the other team has the ball, but maybe people are, you know, the fans will appreciate tomorrow that it might be difficult for spells, which before another Wales game would be very hard to sell,
yeah,
that angle to people that actually they might dominate the ball a bit. You think, how can you allow that to happen at home? But maybe,
yeah,
people realise, well, no Brady, no Houlihan, no Arthur, that maybe might have just happened.
Yeah, and Georgia did it to us.
Georgia have done it to us, so yeah, it is possible.
Scotland were held to a 1-1 draw last night by Canada.
Well, this is the point that's been made, you know, the games against Wales. Well, remember the last campaign we had the two derbies with Scotland, but actually didn't go very well for Ireland. You'd think that kind of game would suit Ireland.
Yeah.
Actually, 1 point from 6 didn't go well. But the slide of Scotland, and I suppose the lesson there is, you know, beware before you get ahead of yourselves too much, because Scotland came to Dublin in like June, 2015. The
also
celebrations, draw, yeah, 1-1 draw, and the cockiness that and the sense of satisfaction that was around that Scottish camp. I think we were lauding how relaxed everyone seemed around the hotel, and Strachan's in a good place, and you know their media telling us how they were a steady operation. They've just slid downhill pretty rapidly since then, and I mean Strachan stayed in the job and looked like he was gone. They're drawn with Canada last night in front of 9,000 people at Easter Road, and how quickly things can turn. And again, at that point, people said, oh, does Scotland have a better squad than us? That could be an argument. But actually, the quality of the collective with Ireland and management, it must be said, has leave us in a situation now where it feels like we're now miles ahead of Scotland.
Yeah. Recently, Brian Kerr was saying that the next Ireland manager should really be Chris Hughton if he wants the job, that he's served his time. There is an argument that what's happening now with Keane as part of the setup, he's actually the perfect next manager.
Well, I think he would be the resounding favourite, presuming that the succession is not enforced, that it's seamless. That O'Neill decides. I mean, this is now we're getting a bit Scottish here. After we go to the World Cup, because this is what's going to happen.
Reaches
semi
final.
He steps aside, and then Roy Keane manages Ireland when there's Euro 2020 group stage games in Dublin, and like everything that's happened in Irish football in the last 30 years has just come round to this point. Keane on the sideline, Ireland in a major tournament, we just all give up, go home, don't bother. This has all been an elaborate
years.
Sort of dream sequence, you know. But hey, that's maybe that's what's going to happen. Roy Keane, Ireland 2020.
I don't think it's completely ridiculous.
It's actually not as ridiculous as it sounds. There is a plausible scenario where that plays itself out.
Does Martin O'Neill, though, decide that actually this is the perfect job for him and he can do this until he's 70 and actually he's really good at it and so therefore...
Maybe so. You do get the sense that he's warmed to it a bit.
He's 65. You forget that.
Yeah, the pace of international management maybe that was unattractive to him may seem attractive. But the flip side is you have this that age profile we touched on earlier with the squad where if you're a young player of the year candidates next year are all 26 or yeah. whatever, do you suddenly sense actually this may be the time to go? You know, a perfect 4 years and then trot along. But I mean, this is dangerous talk. This is dangerous talk. Very dangerous. I feel myself.
Night before a game. Yeah,
yeah, we're setting ourselves up here.
Well, we've already said that I've clearly been sufficiently pessimistic ahead of
you
this game.
You had it earlier. You got the 2-0 defeat in earlier
yeah,
on. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm covered here. Hi, lads. If we're pinning our hopes on an average player who's injured like McCarthy, how bad are we? Asks Dan in Dublin. Not bad at all as a team.
I think that energy that he brings when fully fit can complement. I think actually he played quite well in the second half of the Euros when he was in the more defensive role. I guess the argument you would have, though, Whelan and McCarthy together
haven't been great.
Hasn't always worked. And no. as Keith Andrews touched on earlier, that you know that is maybe seeding something to the opponents by doing that. But it might be the game where you just need that energy.
Yeah, we weren't great in the Georgia game. We weren't great in the first game of this qualifying game. Yeah. We've been decent
since. But McCarthy is a good player. Even there's been signs at Everton this year that he's been... like they loved him. They've gone off him for the last couple of years. And then there's a couple of games since Christmas where he's been involved where it's like, actually, McCarthy could be back to his best. And at his best, he was very well regarded. It's just this injury thing, it's recurring hamstring thing would worry you just in terms of the longer term prognosis.
All right. Earlier on, we asked you to identify our mystery voice.
When he was speaking, you could have heard a pin drop last night.
Know who that is?
I assume it's Darren Clark,
isn't it? Darren Clark. Congratulations to Eddie Keogh. He's in the draw to win himself a round of golf at Royal County Down and also Ard Glass in County Down. The winner gets two nights at the 4-star Burndale Hotel in Newcastle at the foot of the Moor Mountains. It's all with thanks to Discover Northern Ireland. A great range of stay and play offers are now available on discovernorthernireland.com. We'll give you another chance to get into that draw on tomorrow night's show. Tomorrow night we are going to be at the Aviva chomping on hot dogs and hopefully cheering on an Ireland team playing electrifying football. Or being, you know, journalists and keeping our wits about us in the press box.
Just complaining.
We've got the game live here on Off the Ball. Dave and Stewie on comms. Tom Dunn is up next. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Chair.
See you tomorrow.